Call this meeting to order, Health and Social Services Joint Meeting. We have the House with us today. Co-Chair Keller is here to my right. And my Vice Chair is to my left on the Senate side, Senator Passfan. We have Representative Wilson. We have Senator Dyson and Senator Ellis present. We do have a quorum. We do have some reports that's going to come before us. Other people might join us later on, but we're going to go on and get started. We do have gavel to gavel with us today. So we want to try to be timely in what we're doing and get the reports out of the way so we can get to the bill that's before us. Who's going to present first? United Way?
Mm-hmm. 211.
Would you like to come forward, please?
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Sue Brogan, and my colleague Karen Bitzer and I would like to thank you for this opportunity. Every day, hundreds of Alaskans call for essential human services information. They are looking for training for employment. They're looking for hours of operation of a food pantry, help for an aging parent, maybe some information on an addiction prevention program for their teenage child, or maybe just information about affordable housing options. They're not just the homeless in our communities, but they're folks just like you and I. Alaska 211 was launched in 2007, and to date, we've answered 25,000 calls and made 2,586 referrals as a result of those phone calls. It's a free confidential service, and it's available from 8:30 to 5, Monday through Friday. It's statewide, and it's in areas across our state, even where there is no three-digit 911 dialing option. The Alaska Regulatory Commission approved the request from our United Way to have the exclusive rights to use the three-digit number to build this statewide system that is accessible and available no matter where you live across our state. Referrals are made from a robust database. Currently, we have 875 provider sites and 1,978 programs. The data is updated on an ongoing basis when we have new resource information, and anyone can search the database at any time, alaska211.org, and currently we've had over 53,880 web searches. When an individual seeks information or referral services for which they have little or no prior knowledge or experience, dialing 211 is a much simpler option than others. From the homeless to the family that's newly arrived looking for information about after-school programs for their children, Alaska 211 provides greater access to resources. You can see that illustrated on the Alaska 211 snapshot provided to you as part of this presentation. The increased public awareness certainly has increased the use of our system. I'd like to share just a few other benefits. The Alaska 211 project is in a unique position to play a role in disaster response. We're co-located in the Emergency Operations Center in Anchorage, and we have already supported two local responses, one providing health information when Mount Redoubt was erupting, and more recently with the H1N1 immunization clinic effort in Anchorage. We are also connected to a national system, a system that since 2008 has answered over 14 million calls. It's built on a platform that has similar characteristics with other 211 operations, and Alaska 211 could be asked to answer calls from other states, and we would do this by having them roll their phones to us, or we would like roll our phones to them if we needed to. That's really furthers our opportunity to serve not only Alaska, but other states in the nation in disaster response. Also on a national front, the Calling for 211 Act, supported by Senators Murkowski, Begich, and Representative Young, is making its way through the process, and soon you all may have a chance as well to lend your voice and support to this legislation by helping to implement it here in Alaska. The need continues to increase in our state, and while 211 isn't a direct service provider, the data that we collect can and already has been used to influence some very positive change in our state. Recently, our data collected was used in a successful presentation to a major foundation within our state, which resulted in hundreds of thousands of dollars of unrestricted new money being distributed for use to address emergency food and shelter needs. Unrestricted money desperately needed by service providers in large and small communities. Resources where they were needed, not just where they have always gone. There are many information and referral databases being used in our state and funded by the state. Imagine the time and money that we could be saved if those systems were integrated, avoiding the duplication, and the Alaska 211 database be used solely for health and human service referrals. Over the last year, we have worked hard to secure agreements with many departments within the state to require that their grantees keep their information updated in our database. Partnerships with public safety, workforce development, homeland security, to say a few, continue to flourish. Your staff and constituents need to know about this free service. Please include us in your newsletters if you haven't already, and if you haven't linked to us on our website, we would love to have you do that as well. You and your aides, a staff person in a human resources department, or a discharge planner in a hospital can use 211 as for planning and assisting constituents or clients. Alaska 211 helps Alaska get connected to health and human services they need. If the Calling 211 Act passes, we will need the state's commitment so that 211 can access the matching funding. We would love to hear your feedback on how to improve our system to better serve all Alaskans, and we invite you to celebrate with us next week on February 11th, 2010, which has been designated 211 Day. Thank you again, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there a second part to your presentation?
Okay.
No, we're fine.
Any questions from members? I just want to comment, say that you've done an excellent job over the past 2 years that you've been working on the 211 system, and I appreciate you coming forth to give us an update on your report. And we certainly will utilize it by including that in our newsletters and having it mentioned at our constituent meetings that's coming up. You could give us more information on the special day that you have coming. I wasn't aware that there was a day set aside. Maybe there should be something done as far as a citation or something. You might want to contact
offer.
The office.
Thank okay? you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Did you have any things?
I was just here to answer questions if you had any.
You just want to state your name for the record in New York?
My name is Karen Bitzer, and I serve as the director for Alaska 211.
Okay. So. All right. We thank you very much. We do have another person to come forward. And
thank you.
We'll
thank you for your time.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We have members of the Health Commission this present. Are there other members of the commission here?
There are other members of the commission here, yes.
Yes. Why don't you just come up front, or all of you don't plan to speak at this time, but we'd like to know who the members are if you're here.
Senator Davis, I can introduce them when I get started.
I will let you do that, yes, yeah. We will.
Thank you.
You may state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you. For the record, I am Ward Hurlbert. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for the Department of Health and Social Services and the Director of the Division of Public Health. Thank you, Senator Davis, and thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to speak and meet with you today. Want to talk about the Healthcare Commission and the report that we have. I would like to recognize the members that we have in attendance here with us today. We have Mr. Ryan Smith on the end here from Soldotna, who represents the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Mr. Wayne Stevens, who directs the Chamber of Commerce and represents the Chamber of Commerce on the commission. Dr. Larry Stinson in the middle here, who's a physician from the Palmer area who represents providers. I saw his head. Oh, right here, okay. Senator Donnie Olson has been on the committee representing the Senate, and Representative Keller has been a member on the commission since the beginning representing the House, and then Commissioner Hall is here representing the Insurance Commission with the state here. The other members of the committee, and Deb Erickson has been the executive director of the committee. The other members of the committee have been Valerie Davidson, who is with ANTH, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and represents the Native healthcare system, which is such a critical part of our healthcare system in the state. Jeff Davis has represented the payers and the insurance industry, and Keith Campbell has been a consumer on the commission. So we have 7 out of the 10 members here, which I think reflects the commitment that all of the commission members have had since its beginning. The commission was chartered initially by Governor Palin and started work just about a year ago. The first meeting was last February, and the commission has met, had 4 formal meetings, several telephonic meetings. Deb Erickson has been the executive director right from the beginning. I'm the 3rd chair of the commission, and I'm not sure what that says.
Could I interrupt just for a moment?
I think
we have one of the members from the House side out in the audience. Since Representative Sisner, would you come forward, please? And I also want to recognize that Senator Thomas is now with us also.
Sorry for being late.
You may continue.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Davis.
Yes.
Dr. Jay Butler was the initial designated chair, and Jay responded last spring to a request from CDC to go back to Atlanta and head up the CDC portion of the vaccine program for H1N1 on a national basis. And so then Commissioner Hogan filled in for the next meeting in August as the chair, and as I came on duty with the state into my position now, I've been the chair for the fall here and going forward. You all have received the handouts, the commission report, and the PowerPoint overheads that Deb Erickson will be using for her presentation there. We want to cover the report as to what has been done over this past year, the groundwork that has been laid there. That's all I have to say, Senator Davis. I think Deb Erickson will take the next part.
All right, thanks.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to present. My name is Deborah Erickson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. And I'm hoping that all of you have in your packets a copy of a PowerPoint presentation. I'm just going to flip through this as a handout, some of the and refer to some of these slides periodically. And I have some extra copies if you don't, and there also were copies out on the table for members of the public who are sitting in on the hearing. And I will, in the interest of time, go through some of these pretty quickly and might even skip over some. Just wanted to make sure you had some of the background information. Before I get to an overview of the commission's report, though, I thought it'd be helpful just to visit real quickly the history of some of the formal attempts over the past 20 years or more in the state of Alaska to address problems about concerns with access and affordability of health care in our state. Back in 1987, Governor Cooper had created a commission. The governor's, actually the short title is the Governor's Interim Commission for Health Care under Administrative Order 100. That group met for a couple of years and came out with a report in 1988. And then in 1991, the Alaska legislature actually created the Health Resources and Access Task Force. And that group met for a couple of years, pretty intensively, 2-day meetings every month for a good 14, 15, 16 months at least, and also came out with a series of recommendations. Some weren't picked up, others were, such as ACHIA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, to provide a high-risk pool for for folks who couldn't otherwise access health insurance was something I'm remembering came out of the work of that group. But again, it was kind of more short-term ad hoc effort. A private group was formed in 2003 by Commonwealth North, and that group met for a couple of years, came out with a report that was focused on improving access and the delivery of primary care specifically. And then most recently, before the current commission in 2007, Governor Palin had established Alaska Healthcare Strategies Planning Council under administrative order. That group met for about 6 months, came out with a series of recommendations for improving healthcare delivery in the state. I wanted to show you, it's kind of hard to read, but at the top of page two, this slide was actually a graph that was scanned out of the Health Resources and Asset Access Task Force report. And this was a graph that I had remembered actually pretty graphically coming into this job just at the beginning of 2009. I'd had an opportunity to provide a little bit of staff support actually to this group that when they were meeting back in 93, and could remember so vividly this graph that was a projection by a consultant that had been hired to project if nothing changed in terms of what was going on with healthcare delivery and financing at the time, what we could expect to see in terms of the healthcare expenditures into the future. And so you don't have to get out your reading glasses if you don't have them on. Starting in 1991, we were spending total healthcare expenditures in Alaska at that time were about $1.6 billion. The consultant projected that by 2003 we'd be spending over $5.5 billion for healthcare in the state. And we are, in fact, today now estimated to be spending over $6 billion. I remember at the time was with the Department of Health and Social Services, the state Medicaid budget was about $80 million in general funds and was rapidly approaching the $100 million mark, and not being able to imagine being concerned about crossing that $100 million mark and understanding how it would start to eat away at the budgets of other parts of the department. And today now the Medicaid budget GF expenditures are approaching $500 million. So a little bit of a reality check on when we weren't able to get a handle on the problem fully 10 or 15 years ago and where we're at today because of that. And so Governor Palin established now this current Alaska Healthcare Commission under Administrative Order 246 specifically to foster the development of a statewide health care plan to improve affordability and access to health care. And you were just introduced by Dr. Hurlburt, our chair, to the commission members who are present now, and noting the ones who are absent. They're listed there in the report and on the slide. And specifically, the commission was charged with fostering the development of a statewide plan. And we had the responsibility of producing a report and delivering it to the governor and the legislature January 15th of 2010. And that report was transmitted to Senate President and the Speaker of the House and to the governor on January 15th. Again, you all have copies of it, and it's available on our website as well. Before I go over some of the specific recommendations in the report, I thought I would touch on a couple of the themes that are captured in some of the background information that were particular interest and I think driving the work of the commission. And one issue came up in the first meeting, but we would revisit periodically, and one of our members, actually one of the ones who wasn't here, was fond of was referring to as the elephant in the room, and that was generally the cost of healthcare in the state, but specifically the question about whether healthcare in Alaska is more expensive than it is elsewhere, and even more specifically, are prices for healthcare services in Alaska more expensive? I'm going to skip over some of these next slides quickly. Just some examples of how healthcare in the United States generally is quite a bit higher than in other countries, the cost, and what that means. Moving on to the top of page five, slide nine. What that means in terms of workers and families' ability to afford health care, as insurance premiums have risen so much more quickly than income, that it's starting to eat up more and more of families' take-home pay, the cost of health care. We did find evidence that costs for care in Alaska are higher. Just some examples cited here on slide 10 at the bottom of page 5. Alaska has the highest annual Medicaid expenditure level per enrollee in the country. Alaska's ranked first in the nation for the cost of workers' comp premiums. And what's significant about that is that the medical costs proportion of the premiums that are driven by medical costs are significantly higher in Alaska than in most other places. Our workers' comp medical fee schedule rates are 3 times higher on average than the state's workers' comp fees that are at the lowest levels. Medical costs make up 72% of workers' comp benefit claims in Alaska. The national average is actually 58%. And the average medical cost per workers' comp claim is $40,000 per injury in Alaska compared to the national average of $26,000. Cost per hospital stay, the average cost per hospital stay in our state is nearly twice that of the national average. And just another point of interest, the inflation for medical prices in Anchorage, the CPI, consumer price index for Anchorage, doubled between 1991 and 2005, specifically for medical care, compared to overall, including medical care, increase consumer price index of 38% during that same time period. And then we really didn't have the time or the resources and the time and the financing that we had in this first year to really dig into and gather information we needed to study the issue of pricing. Identified just as a couple of examples of pointing to the fact that Alaska has some higher prices than other states are some examples from our Medicaid fee schedules that show, just compared to Washington state, Alaska's Medicaid fees are generally 2 to 3 times higher than the fees paid by Washington's Medicaid program. And then some examples of differences in workers' comp fees between Alaska, Washington, and Hawaii. And again, Alaska's fees are significantly higher. So the elephant in the room, again, that we would refer to as the high prices for care in Alaska and high cost of care in Alaska. Another issue that the commission was particularly interested in and concerned about, a physician who would come to our meetings, actually not one of the commission members, but would refer to as the 800-pound gorilla, is real significant issue in health care and something that's really going to be hard to get our arms wrapped around. And that is the role that individual behaviors play in determining health and determining the need for utilization of health care services. That 40% of the determinants of health are driven by individual behaviors as opposed to just 10% driven by access and quality to health care. And how health behaviors are a significant determinant of chronic disease and the prevalence of chronic disease in our population, the fact that nationwide 70% of all deaths are caused by chronic disease, and a majority of those are preventable diseases, and that 75% of all healthcare expenditures in the country are expenditures for costs related to chronic disease. There's research that came out of Emory on the top of page 8 now, slide 15. That graph just demonstrates, based on this research findings, that 2/3 of the increase in healthcare expenditures in this country over the past 20 years or so are due to increase in chronic disease. It's not due to chronic disease. The research findings are that if our chronic disease prevalence in our population had stayed the same over the past 20 years, we would have actually saved in this country $200 billion in healthcare expenditures. So that's just due to the increasing prevalence in chronic disease that we're seeing such a significant increase in healthcare costs overall. This next slide at the bottom of page 8, I'd like to give credit to Mark Foster, who's an economist who works with ICER, the Institute for Social and Economic Research. We're sitting around, not with our healthcare commission, but with a group from Commonwealth North a couple of months ago, all scratching our heads over this cost problem. And And at one point, he had to get up and say, look, and he wrote this equation on a whiteboard for us. Very simple. We shouldn't have needed economists to point this out to us, but the fact that overall costs are driven by components of pricing and then overall utilization, kind of bringing those two issues that have been important to the Healthcare Commission of the price for healthcare services and then the utilization of services and how that's driven by a variety of factors, including chronic disease and individual behaviors. So that's just a little bit of background information that's captured in this report. The top of page 9 is just a cartoonist rendition of how I think most people see and perceive the healthcare system in this country, not too much different from, I think, the way we came to see the healthcare delivery system in our state with this train that doesn't even have wheels down on the track, and it's and you can see the picture. It's just a mess. The issues that were identified by the commission, again, included in this report, the diagnosis of Alaska's healthcare system. I've just listed some of the highlights here on slide 18. Costs are unaffordably high. They're continuing to climb. Our system is fragmented. It's made up by lots of different players and different sectors. The financing and payment mechanisms really are very complex, don't make a whole lot of sense when you look at them as a whole. There are a lot of Alaskans who lack access to health insurance. There are Alaskans who have access to health insurance, are on Medicare, have private insurance, but can't find a physician to take care of them. There are high vacancy rates in a number of healthcare workforce job categories. There are different levels and variations in the quality of care that really aren't well understood yet, and room for improvement there. And we heard from a number of consumers and also a number of healthcare providers who really are starting to get really frustrated with the system. And the commission's biggest concern, you'll see when we get to their vision and values, was about sustainability of the healthcare system. That the way the system's designed right now, we don't expect it to be sustainable into the future. So the commission designed a strategic plan. They laid out a 5-year planning framework that started with developing, identifying a vision for what the ideal health care delivery system for Alaska would look like, and then followed by a process to identify what the current problems with the system are, if we could describe what the system looks like today, then elements that would build a foundation for the reformed, transformed healthcare delivery system for the state, a process for identifying different strategies and a comprehensive approach for making improvements to the system to move it towards achieving that vision, measuring progress along the way, and engaging the public and stakeholders in that process are all important components of that 5-year planning framework. In addition to that, laying out that 5-year planning framework, the commission came up with a series of recommendations. There are actually 31 different specific recommendations contained in this report around some of the priority issue areas that they identified. And included along with those general policy recommendations that are directed to the governor and to the legislature, there are some tables in the back of the report that actually lay out some more specific action steps. If you were going to take this policy recommendation, this is how the commission would recommend you could move forward with actually implementing some steps to move in the direction of adopting that policy. And then with the hope that there would be a healthcare commission in the future continuing this work, a work plan for the next year to kind of build on the work that was already done this year is included in the report as well. On the bottom of page 10, slide 20, the vision and values that this commission identified are described and laid out here. One of the things that I think is important related to the vision is that this commission felt that the healthcare delivery system focuses too much on providing sick care and needs to focus more on producing health and improving health status, that we need to look at ways for improving the value of the dollar that is spent, and that we need to have a system that where both the consumers, the patients in the system, as well as the providers, the people working in the system, the people owning the businesses in the system are happy with the system and not so frustrated. And again, the importance of making sure that system is sustainable. and that any of the recommendations that any planning group advisory body comes up with, any of the specific strategies that are proposed as a component of that, I think were something that needs to be sustainable too, as this group would say. Improving access, controlling costs, improving quality, and making sure the system's prevention-based are all the goals that were identified, as well as the values. Again, the word sustainability came up over and over again. Improved efficiency and effectiveness of delivering the services. The importance of individual choice and personal engagement in both improving health and health status, and also in being engaged in the delivery of health care. All important values. So at the very first meeting last February, the group identified a series of priorities that they wanted to focus on this first year. One being the consumer's role in healthcare, and two elements of that, both again related to healthy lifestyles and individual choice and individual behaviors, and also looking at the medical delivery side. Specifically, this group identified the importance of primary care and that first level of care that's provided in the system, and making sure that it's as innovative as possible. And there are details in here that I'm not going to have time to go over about how they would see an innovative primary care model. Statewide leadership, of course, all of the work that's been and the focus on national reform over this past year was at the forefront of the minds of this group as they did their work. It's one of the reasons why you won't see in this report any recommendations related to improving access to health insurance, health care coverage. And specifically because there was so much work going on at the national level, there was no way to know what exactly would come out of that, if anything would come out of it. The group felt it would be a waste of their time in this first year to try to come up with some strategies related to that. So it's not that it wasn't an important issue, but that it really needed to be set aside for the work that was being done in Congress. The commission recognized at their very first meeting that having 1 year's time was not going to be enough time to delve in, dig in, to a real good analysis and develop a comprehensive understanding of the problems with the healthcare delivery system, and to develop a comprehensive set of strategies and solutions for addressing it. And so it was really, I think, probably the very first recommendation the group came up with, is that there really needs to be a permanent body established in statute, that these 1 or 2 year groups, while they've had some positive outcomes and have done a lot of good and important work, it's not enough to sustain the effort over time. The importance of the healthcare workforce and developing the healthcare workforce with a short amount of time, recognizing there are lots of healthcare workforce issues. The group identified physician supply as a specific issue that they wanted to study this past year. And so while there are some general workforce development recommendations, there are also some specific recommendations related to physician supply. The important role that health information technology and the developments that are happening in that area with the move to electronic health records and also development of health information exchange was another area. And then a specific issue, the problems that Medicare enrollees, especially in urban areas of our state, are experiencing with accessing primary care and finding a physician who will take a new Medicare enrollee was a final issue that the group wanted to study, identified right up front that they wanted to study at the beginning of this past year. So you can see that those first four priorities actually kind of came together neatly into an overall healthcare transformation strategy. Since I just described those, I'm not going to spend any time, but they're kind of those system or infrastructure components of workforce, leadership, and technology at the base, supporting an improved and enhanced role for the consumer in healthcare. And then that fifth element, turning the page to the top of page 12, the question is the Medicare access problem. Is that really the canary in the gold mine? Is this specific but very serious problem an early indication, warning that our state's healthcare system is beginning to fail? So moving on to the recommendations now, there are a series of recommendations I noted earlier. There are 31 total recommendations cut across these five different priority areas. Strengthening the consumer's role, there's a recommendation. There's some general policy recommendations. Again, there's another part in the back of the report that lays out some more specific steps with suggestions for a general policy recommendation to support healthy lifestyles and create culture of wellness to the governor and to the legislature. Sounds nice, but what does that mean for a state agency or public policy to be able to actually move that forward? We have some specific suggestions for that. Developing a patient-centered primary care model and with some more specific recommendations related to the need for an identification of strategies looking at changing the way that we pay for services, identifying statutory and regulatory barriers to this new model of care, and a recommendation that pilot projects be developed to start testing some of these. Fostering statewide leadership. I don't know if any of you have had a chance, excuse me, to take a look at the more than 2,000 page bills coming out of both the House and the Senate at the national level. It's daunting, and there really is no one agency in the state that's responsible for looking at healthcare overall and for understanding what the impact of the federal proposals are comprehensively for all Alaskans, Alaskan families, Alaskan business, government certainly, but I'm looking at all of the pieces. So one of the recommendations is that there needs to be infrastructure and capacity in place to respond to and analyze and understand the impacts of national reform efforts. And again, the need for a permanent state health planning board. A series of recommendations around developing the healthcare workforce, that it's important, it needs to be a priority, ongoing priority on the part of the legislature and the governor on healthcare reform and on economic development agendas. Strengthening the pipeline, looking at as early as kindergarten and elementary school at the need for kids to be exposed to healthcare as a workforce option and opportunity, and also making sure that they get the right base foundation in their education, math and science, that they need if they choose to move into that field. Looking at the innovations and adaptations that, I mean, Alaska really has been a leader in globally, not just in the nation, in some real innovative approaches to delivering care, like the community health aid programs, the dental health aid programs that have been developed in the tribal health system for the most rural and remote communities of our state, and the recommendation that we need to build on that innovation and adaptation and continue it. There's actually a lot going on in the area of planning for healthcare workforce development. For example, Workforce Investment Board has charged a group to develop a strategic plan for the state, specifically for developing our state's healthcare workforce. There's a lot of other work that the State Mental Health Trust Authority, the Department of Health and Social Services have been doing in this area. So the commission identified these different efforts and acknowledged them, and they're very important, but also identify the importance of making sure that they're coordinated, that folks aren't duplicating efforts, and there's a recommendation that a single entity be designated to be responsible for overseeing and making sure that coordination happens. And then a series of recommendations specific to increasing the supply of primary care physicians. I think that's one of the keys. This group, recognizing that state resources are limited, recommended to the legislature and the governor that to the extent money is being spent to improve the supply of physicians in the state, public monies are being spent, that those need to be targeted to using for increasing the supply of primary care physicians specifically. The group recommends that educational loan repayment program be established to improve recruitment and retention in the state. Suggests that the WAMI program, State's Medical School Program, collaborative with the University of Washington Medical School, could be expanded as one way to improve the supply of physicians as state resources allow. And also, GME's graduate medical education, it's the provision of residency training. Physicians following medical school have to go through a residency program that's at least 3 years in length to complete their training before they can practice medicine. And to the extent we can develop more of those programs, we only have one in this state, family medicine residency program, that we will capture more physicians to stay in Alaska to practice. page 14, deploying health information technology. There's quite a lot going on in that area, but the commission has a series of recommendations. These few bullets are just some general groupings of those for how we can, the appropriate role for the government in supporting the adoption and utilization of electronic health records, supporting the development of health information exchange so those records could be connected, the importance of ensuring privacy and security. There's some recommendations related to that. As part of the look at health information technology, we also looked at telemedicine. This is another area where the state's really a leader in the country and in the nation. And there are some specific recommendations about what we could do to continue using and building on our telemedicine capabilities, both with improving telecommunications infrastructure and improving resource specifically for telemedicine services. And then finally, moving on to improving Medicare access. This is really a challenging problem. I'm afraid there probably are no real quick and easy fixes to this problem, and there really needs to be, because there are a lot of folks out there who are really struggling, not just frustrated, really suffering with this problem. But the commission identified that the most important thing we could do would be to increase the supply of primary care providers and then revisit the recommendations specific to increasing the supply of primary care physicians, but also acknowledge the role that mid-level practitioners, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants play, and specifically developing a residency program for internal medicine is an area that is seen as being an important contributor. Supporting FQHCs and RHCs, sorry, I apologize for the acronyms, federally qualified health centers and rural health clinics are federal safety net programs, and anything the state can do to support development of those clinics is seen as a way to improve access for Medicare beneficiaries. Relief from federal reimbursement inequities and administrative burden. We heard a lot from physicians about the problems that those federal policies impose on them. And then developing the PACE program, I'm sorry again for another acronym. PACE stands for Programs of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly. It's actually a Medicare and Medicaid waiver program that provides comprehensive integrated wraparound services for seniors who would choose to enroll in it. It would only be folks who are eligible for and need nursing home level of care, so it's only for the most frail elderly. But they would be, anybody enrolled in that program would be, the program would be required to provide primary care services for them. I am going to skip over these next few slides, transformation elements beyond those recommendations. The commission identified a whole series of other strategies that are grouped around these three general categories of improving access to care, improving value, which is driving down the cost, and improving quality, and prevention. Everything from continued work that needs to be done to address the workforce needs, looking at changing the way we pay for care, and improving public health population-based prevention activities. And so there's a short description of each of these strategies included in the report to provide kind of a jumping off point for a future planning effort, whoever would end up picking it up, to understand where we're at today with those and how those might work and how they could be studied further, what some of the problems might be, as well as some of the opportunities with those. So now this current commission established under Administrative Order 246, the members are appointed through the end of April. The commission's work is essentially done with the production of this report, but there are three bills currently pending in the legislature that would establish a healthcare commission in statute. SB 172, House Bill 25, and House Bill 75 are all bills that have been filed that establish a permanent body. Should one of those pass, then this work will continue. So I thank you very much. That's the end of my presentation. And I'm happy to entertain any questions.
First of all, we want to thank you for the report, and I also want to say at this time that we appreciate the work that you have put into the commission over the short period of time that you've had it. You've done quite a bit of work, and the reports we have before us, and it's going to come in handy for us as we continue to work towards some of the bills that you want us to implement. In fact, when we are finished with this, we are going to go into one of the bills here on this side that has been introduced by Senator Olson for the commission. At this time, I'm just going to see if there are any questions from the committee or comments that they might want to make to the commission while we have them present. Yes, Senator Passavant?
Yes. You know, in one of the slides, you referenced the term chronic disease, and I think it might be important for this panel and certainly the citizens that are listening on gavel to gavel to define that term so that when you indicate that 4 out of the 5 leading causes of death are in chronic disease and 75% of the medical expenditures are in chronic disease, you know, if you could kind of expand on what you mean by chronic disease.
Yes, Senator Pascal, I'd be happy through the chair to respond to you. When I first came to Alaska back in 1961, our big killers were infectious disease, accidents and injuries, things that were fairly short-term episodic events, and the rest of the country had changed. We were still changing, particularly in the bush parts of Alaska. Contrary to that, those are episodes, if you get an infectious disease now, we can usually treat it. You can be over it, you can get it behind you, and you can be well. Some things we know, like HIV/AIDS, really are a chronic disease. So there's some overlap. But chronic diseases are diseases that the conditions that people acquire that then go on generally for the rest of your life. Some of them are wear and tear conditions. We'll all get arthritis of our knees if we live long enough. We'll get some things that are just wear and tear. Probably most chronic diseases, and those that really concern us the most, are what I would call diseases of choice now. We don't get enough exercise. We don't eat the proper diet, and so we become overweight. We get diabetes, we get heart disease. We smoke, and we get chronic lung disease. These are the kinds of things that we do that that often are due to bad choices. Some of it's just living, but there are conditions that go on that there is not a magic bullet like a penicillin shot for a strep throat that gets you over it. But physicians can help alleviate the pain, help alleviate the suffering, reduce it, extend your life expectancy. But these chronic conditions are things that will go on for a long, long time, and they're what are killing us for the most part now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Keller?
I just want to take the opportunity on the record to thank the commissioners and the director and the chair. I just wanted to say that over the process of days of working on this, I developed a profound respect for the other commissioners, and both in their knowledge and their professional approach to working on the problem. And I know that I'm speaking for the other commissioners when I say we have a very good director, as you might guess, as you look at this report and listen to the report. And of course, Dr. Hurlburt, Dr. Butler, and Commissioner Hogan. But it's been a good process, and I'm kind of taking some liberty here speaking for the other commissioners, but I think I know how they feel. We have pride in the report, and we thank you for receiving it.
Thank you. Representative
Smith. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have been watching this this whole effort at finding solutions to the problems that you went over for some time now, and I believe this commission and its result has been a fine document and has risen above some of the grounding that has occurred in the past when we're looking at it one way and not looking at all of the different layers of problems that somehow have to be worked through, and a totally new way of looking at the system you began. And I think that that's really wonderful. And I'm really excited to see it because this is the first time I've seen where we have one part of the political system. Our governor has created an initiative that everything I'm seeing looking in your report appears to be initiating some of what your report has even been talking about, that we have to handle incredibly difficult things like domestic violence from numbers of different angles and looking at it from definitely the preventative side in addition to the other sides. So I think it's very exciting. It's very fun to be here. Thank you.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciated the acknowledgement of the legislative task force. Former Senator Jim Duncan of Juneau co-chaired that task force with me, and that was several years of a rough slog way back then. And it's not too surprising to hear you say that what we predicted then, the bad things that would occur have come true in spades, I guess, more than we ever anticipated. We said at the time that if things didn't change, if we didn't get a handle on things, it would just get worse in terms of budget impacts, human tragedy. All of those things have come true. So hopefully we laid a groundwork with some of our work for your work, and we appreciate what you've done in this latest iteration of this kind of work. So maybe we can come together and make something happen if not at the federal level, at the state level.
Yes, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Appreciate your report, very informative, and in fact, it has obviously influenced some discussion that takes place in the legislature and some bills that have been introduced. But I see from, and I'm trying to recall the original mission, and I'm assuming that it's accurately reflected here in your letter to Governor Parnell and Senator Stevens and Representative Chenault regarding what your purview was. Recommendations for quality, accessibility, and availability of health care. Would you suggest that since you've gathered a lot of information, that a continuation of the commission through a legislative action would be more to concentrate on how we can control the cost now that we've gathered a lot of information and know pretty much or have validated what we probably already suspected? As you said, somebody in 93 had indicated this is what would be happening. So is that the next step then to move forward and try and have an impact, like taking the chronic illnesses and making sure that maybe early in school we indicate to children how harmful these may be to their health as they develop eating habits, those types of things? Is that, that's long term, of course, but is that the type of thing that you would anticipate the commission would do in the future?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Thomas. Yes, I think that's a part of it. It is broad. It is our whole life. Deborah mentioned cost issues. That's part of it. There are issues of making sure we do the right thing, where we have good, strong knowledge. The lifestyle kinds of things, these chronic diseases, these diseases of choice, for eating habits, for lifestyle, it begins even before school. We know we see young kids, preschool kids, becoming overweight now. School's an opportunity because we have kids for several hours a day in a structured environment. So the things that we need to do, we can seek to do in those settings. So I think that's a part of it. It's broad, but that's a part of it.
Thank you.
If there's no other comments, if we're going to close the hearing at this time, and once more, we thank you for coming before us, and you'll be informed on some of the work that we're going to be doing, and if you want to testify on some of the bills, we'd love to have your comments. Thank you. We'll just take a brief break so that we can have Senator Olson and his staff come forward to get ready to present the commission bill. Senate Bill 172.
It's getting real late.
Yeah, you're going to stay? Yeah, you're going to be here. If you want to stay, you can.
You know, 20 years ago, we said...
For the record, we do have Senate Bill 172, sponsor Senator Olson. He had staff member here with him, and we'll just turn everything over to them at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. It's my privilege today to go ahead and introduce Senate Bill 172, which essentially establishes the Alaska Health Care Commission as a permanent entity under Alaska law. As was pointed out, one of the things that Alaska is facing currently is a serious health care cost, access, and quality availability issues. The ICER report that was alluded to by by Ms. Deb Erickson stated that between 1991 and 2005, health care expenditures in our state tripled from $1.6 billion to $5.3 billion. These costs are expected to double again by 2013. All levels of government, state, local, and federal are affected. But what's more important is that Alaska's economy cannot sustain this kind of inflationary growth. So the purpose of Senate Bill 172 is to go ahead and establish in statute the Alaska Health Care Commission to address the needs for health care reform throughout our state. The issues are broad, they're complex, and cannot be dealt with unless we have a permanent body to plan and follow through with these long-range comprehensive health care reforms. Two recent groups have tried to go ahead and look at it, the round table that was alluded to earlier on, as well as the Planning Commission as late as 2007. Both of these recommended a permanent body to be established to address the problems that we are facing. The Health Care Commission will be established in the Department of Health and Social Services, consist of 10 members, including public officials as well as private citizens. People from private business, the healthcare community, as well as consumers are also included. The commission will provide its recommendations to address the development of a statewide plan to address the quality, accessibility, and availability of healthcare to all residents of the state of Alaska. Alaska's need for healthcare reform is pressing and must be dealt with thoroughly and efficiently with a long-range view toward meaningful and lasting change. The Healthcare Commission will play an important role in this process and is essential that we make it a permanent component of the Department of Health and Social Services so that present as well as future issues with Alaska's healthcare system can be better anticipated, understood, and addressed. And I must say from a selfish standpoint, and as we look at ourselves, we're all mortal. We're all getting older. By the time we implement these kind of things that we're dealing with today, we're going to be, hopefully, still living, and if that's the case, we're going to be, as Dr. Herbert pointed out, suffering from wear and tear and those kind of things, and we're going to be in need of health care on a more acute basis because the population of Alaska is definitely on the rise, and the average age of the Alaskan is also on the rise. With that, Madam President, members of the committee, I submit this bill to you.
Thank you very much. At this time, do you plan to give us an overview of the bill in its entirety, or are you wanting me to go forward with public testimony at this time?
Well, it depends on how much time you have, Madam Chairman. If you have questions on the bill,
we're going to be here until 3 o'clock, so we do have 25 minutes.
Well, I have my chief of staff here, Denise Litchfield, and she can go with specifics on the bill if you'd like to do that. Otherwise, I'd be glad to have public testimony because I think it's important that we hear from those members of the community that aren't necessarily deeply involved in the political arena to express their views.
We won't be able to finish the public testimony today. We will continue it. And so that's not going to be a problem. I want to hear from my committee members, though, as they see this bill, if there is anything they want to be clarified before we begin to take the testimony. We do have time to do that. The public testimony will continue at the next meeting. Yes, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I think Senator Olson raised a pretty good point. There may indeed be some of the people who have come to testify today. It would be difficult for them to come back another time. And I would suggest you perhaps let's see if that's the case with some of them and give them an opportunity to talk to us today.
I most certainly have no problem doing that. Is there anyone present that would not be able to testify at a later time? Would you please come forward and we'll begin from there. I only have one person online at this point to testify. Everybody else is here within the building.
What do you mean I had to get it first?
You don't necessarily have to be. I can go down the list, but I want you to identify yourself.
Look, I'm halfway up here.
Okay.
And then I'd have to go halfway back, and here we be.
Thank you very much. So we'll open up for public testimony at this time. Would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Ellen Adlam. I am a board member for Peninsula Community Health Services of Alaska in Soldotna, Alaska. Been on the board for about 8 years, chaired it for the immediate past chair. Whew, what a relief that is. And now I feel like I have time to move forward, and I've been involved for a long time with health centers. I'm an x-ray tech by trade, so I bring a nice balance of working in the private sector as well as being part of the public sector and being part of community health centers. And I support Senator Olson's bill to make this a permanent. It's a big problem in this state, and we need to do what we need, whatever we can, to make that work. And I am completely supportive of his bill. One of the things I think that is lacking on the commission, however, is that there is really not any voice for the small, for the underserved and uninsured. We really would like to see the establishment of a commission seat, a primary care safety net seat on the commission. You know, we are one of the three largest health systems, hospitals, tribal, and the community health centers, and we don't really have representation. There needs to be some representation of primary care safety net. We serve, you know, 81, I think we're serving 8,100. 81,000. See, I knew they'd correct me if I get it wrong. we serve 81,000 patients. We have 26 organizations with 142 sites. We're serving people all over, and primary care needs to be we need a voice. We need to be, you know, we're part of the solution to the problem that, you know, we're facing. Our sites see Medicare folks, and that's one of the issues that you're facing. You're facing, you know, there isn't a lot of places that will see Medicare folks. A lot of the docs can't see them. It's not working for them, but we don't turn them away. And so it's really important that what we would like to suggest, what would be good to see, is that you utilize a provider from a health center, because we provide not only medical but dental and behavioral health as well. So that would encompass getting that voice for the under and uninsured and the primary care seat, you know, the primary provider. So that's pretty much what I wanted to make sure that you guys understood and got. And if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them, but otherwise.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Are there any questions? We will just move forward then. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
I really could go down the list that we have here. We just have a few minutes. I'm thinking that almost everyone here is in support of the bill, in the sense that they want the commission to be established. There might be other things that you might want to suggest that we consider in the bill, and we'll be glad to hear that. I have a note in front of me saying that Senator Olson, would you? Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Thanks. I thought Senator Olson wanted to say something before we began to take the testimony. Is there anyone that's here now that's not going to be able to come back? Would you come forward, please? Dr. Stinson?
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak today on behalf of this bill. I've reviewed the different bills. I've reviewed Senator Olson's bill. I think this is a very good bill. I think you have to balance between representation and numbers of people on committees to get things done. I do think that there's arguments, pros and cons, both ways, and I think this bill puts it into a manageable group. I think another very good aspect about this bill is it keeps any one particular entity from having a majority vote. Whenever you get into healthcare, be it pharmacy, be it hospitals, be it providers, if you can stack any kind of commission with one particular thought, you've just basically ruined the whole point of the commission. A commission can be a very, very good thing if it's centered on the patients, if it's centered on controlling costs, and if it's not protecting sacred cows for different special interests. And I think Senator Olson's bill addresses that. For the very same reasons why the commission can be a very, very good thing, it can also be a very, very bad thing. And after reviewing his bill, I think it takes that into account. I support the bill. I'm speaking not as a healthcare commission member, but just as a practicing physician in Alaska.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Deborah Erickson, are you in the room? Do you want to come forward again?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. And Senators, for the record, my name is Deborah Erickson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. And I wanted to testify on the bill just to point out a few specific things, especially for the record. So hopefully I'm not going to be too repetitive here, but related specifically to SB 172. I thought the committee might be interested to know that this particular bill mirrors very closely the administrative order number 246 that established the current commission and actually includes a transition clause, a provision that would automatically appoint the members of the current commission to the new commission if SB 172 were to pass in its current form. And so the work that you just heard about in the presentation, the first year report from the Alaska Healthcare Commission, really has laid the groundwork and would be a good jumping off point should this bill pass. I also wanted to point out, again, specifically that one of the recommendations of the current Alaska Healthcare Commission is to establish a commission in statute. The commission recommended specifically that a body that is the same size as the current commission be established, and if I can represent some of the discussion that went on around that recommendation, there was concern that if a group got too much larger, that it would could potentially become more of an advocacy group than a planning and advisory group. There was some recognition, while there was pretty big diversity of opinions on the body, that it was small enough that folks were kind of forced to have to work through their differences and could share and be respectful of different opinions and try to work together to come to a common solution. If you have a larger group, sometimes it's easier to kind of for sides to divide against one another and conquer. So I'm not representing my personal opinion, but explaining some of the background behind that specific recommendation of the commission. I don't think I have anything more based on that last presentation. But again, just for the record, for 172, there's a five-year planning framework laid out by the current commission that a future commission could take forward, along with many specific strategies and follow-up work and a work plan for this next year. So that's it for my testimony, unless there are any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
The bill doesn't have any pay raises for the commissioners, right?
No, sir.
It's volunteer work.
All right. Thurber, you want to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Ward Hurlburt. I'm the Chief Medical Officer of the Department of Health and Social Services and the Director of the Division of Public Health. And thank you again for the opportunity to testify regarding this bill. Through the chair, I'd have to respond to Representative Keller that the salary is going to be doubled. I'm testifying on behalf of the governor and the department, and the department and the governor both do support Senate Bill 172. The process has been described to you, the composition of the commission, and under this bill, there's likelihood that there will be significant continuity. The members of the commission, as it has existed and as it would be structured under Senator Olson's bill, really come from different
professional and geographic backgrounds, but have worked representing the entire state and the entire state's population, bringing the individual expertise of each of the members, but truly working as a team and reflecting the whole state there. And we think that's a value, that there is momentum that has been achieved, and under Senate Bill 172, this momentum would continue. As has been discussed, there will be a major focus on cost. Health care now costs about 18% of our gross domestic product. We're up to about close to $6 billion a year in Alaska for our health care costs. The American Health Insurance Plans Association just announced today that the expectation is nationally that health insurance premiums for commercial insurance will go up more than 10% in 2010. That's when we're seeing overall probably 1.4% inflation, similar increase in wages. So those costs will continue to eat into folks' revenue. The governor's supplemental request to the legislature for funding, when you look at it and take out the restoration of the Constitutional Reserve Fund and the Educational Foundation funds, Medicaid is a huge chunk of that. To the extent that I would say probably every department in every state in these United States almost has to make control of Medicaid costs their top priority. You cannot have a Department of Natural Resources if the resources continue to be gobbled up. And so we need to tackle that. I would have to share that I'm in contention for national seating as a cynic on commissions. So that may be good or bad, but I think this is so important. The reason I say that is commissions often talk, they have a report, and then nothing happens unless they have authority like the North Pacific Fisheries Commission. But I think that the folks on this commission have really worked together. There's great vesting in the need. There's great recognition that it's a huge challenge for our whole society. So I believe that, that the department, the commissioner, and the governor are doing the right thing in requesting that that the legislature continue this commission to grapple with this problem. A part of it's going to be cost. We've talked about prices. Part of it is making sure we do the right thing. Just today there was a news item that the 12 years ago in The Lancet, a very respected medical journal out of Great Britain, that associated the development of autism in children with the use of immunizations for measles, mumps, and German measles, was retracted, that the whole study was fraudulently done. And The Lancet, now 12 years later, retracted that and said, this is not something that you can trust. We need to look at all that we do in healthcare and make sure that the evidence really supports it so that we don't squander the limited dollars that we have. And we believe the commission can be a force in fostering that in our state and in our community here. So again, I thank you for the opportunity. Those are the end of my comments, Madam Chair, and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? All right. Beverly Smith. Is there Beverly Smith present? Please come forward. Mm-hmm.
For the record, my name is Beverly Smith. I'm the Christian Science Committee on Publication for the State of Alaska. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today and offer comments on 172. In my capacity as Christian Science Committee on Publication for Alaska, one of my roles is to ensure that you have accurate information concerning spiritual healing as practiced in Christian Science, so that this cost-effective and reliable form of care is not overlooked or restricted in the state's health care reform efforts. With regards to SB 172, I'm here to request that access to spiritual care for the treatment and cure of disease be given appropriate consideration during the discussion of the development of a statewide health plan. To facilitate this discussion, I recommend that the bill mandate one of the duties of the commission to be to recommend the extent to which and under what circumstances access to spiritual care should be addressed in a comprehensive statewide health care policy. Because health care reform discussions around the country, in the state and federal levels, have raised issues that could impact the insurance coverage for spiritual care, it is important that these issues be discussed so as not to create unintended results that subvert this coverage and therefore limit the access to spiritual care. I notice that the bill does not mandate insurance coverage for all Alaskans, but asks the commission to develop a strategy that encourages acquisition of health insurance and that increases the number of insurance options for health care services. And insurance is a topic I'm interested in because if Alaskans pay health insurance premiums, they should be able to be reimbursed for the health care they choose, whether that be medical care or spiritual treatment. And existing law on a state and federal level contains numerous examples of programs that offer benefits for spiritual care, including, and I've listed five bullet points, and I believe you have a copy of this, so I don't need to go through each one, but they're federal programs for the most part. And the last one is a bullet saying that Alaska is one of a number of states that, in fact, allows coverage of spiritual treatment through their government employees' health insurance plans, which Alaska does. And spiritual care is also recognized, Christian Science care is, under the IRS. You can deduct expenses on your as a medical expense in your income tax. So I would hope that the commission would preserve the insurance coverage for spiritual care that we now have and recommend that it be expanded, perhaps to include religious non-medical nursing services. If the commission were directed in statute to include access to spiritual care in its discussion of reform, this would prevent such access from being overlooked or minimized. Christian Science is a method of spiritual care that is available to everyone. For over a century, individuals from many different faith traditions have found Christian Science to be reliable and effective in addressing the challenges posed by injury and disease. For this reason, they will often choose religious non-medical health care in lieu of medical care. Access to reliable and cost-effective health care should be one of the primary goals of health care reform. For many Americans, the issue at hand is in some ways more fundamental, and that is having the option to choose the method of health care most effective for them. And I'm grateful to the sponsor of this bill for his effort in bringing solutions to the health care challenges in Alaska by seeking to establish the health care commission in statute. And I respectfully request that this commission have the responsibility for discussing and recommending how access to spiritual treatment and care can be part of the overall health care plan in Alaska.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Ryan Smith.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my comments will be brief. My name is Ryan Smith. I'm the CEO at Central Peninsula Hospital and Heritage Place in Soldotna, Alaska. Again, appreciate the opportunity to be part of the Alaska Healthcare Commission and the opportunity to present here today. I would like to publicly thank Deb and Dr. Hurlbert for their work, and then also Representative Keller and Commissioner Hall for their participation, and then First Senator Olson for sending forward the Senate Bill 172. You all have a copy of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association's position on this bill, which is it strongly supports SB 172, and so I won't go into any more of those details. I will say, as being part of the commission and our strong focus on individual responsibility, I have started a a BMI spreadsheet at our hospital. We have about 12 directors participating, so public humiliation has sparked fierce competition amongst weight loss there, so any of my commission members or committee members that want to email me or text me your weight every Sunday, I'll add you to the spreadsheet and give you part of this process. But again, thank you for the opportunity, and again, the Hospital Association is strongly supportive of SB 172.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? It's almost 3 o'clock, and there are other meetings that's going to start at that time. I only have two other people to testify, so I will complete it. I will let the people from the House side go because they do have a 3 o'clock, and they want to be on time for that. But I'll call on Kate Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Kate Burkhart. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. I always preface my remarks with the fact that both boards were created by statute with statutory duties that include providing advice and advocacy on issues related to mental health and substance abuse to the executive and legislative branches. The information and position I'll talk about today are those of the boards, not of the governor's office or the department. I always preface that so people know where we're coming from. On behalf of the boards, I do extend our appreciation to the Healthcare Commission for the work that they have done. And we do support the continuation of a Healthcare Commission in whatever form that takes, as long as it includes representation of the behavioral health system. This is not a new idea. Public comment was provided by the CEO of the Alaska Mental Health Trust, Jeff Jesse, last year to the commission. And we have spoken with Commissioner Hogan when he was then chairing the commission about our concerns. As you can see from the full report, the recognition of the impact of mental health and substance abuse issues on the overall wellness of all Alaskans is pretty clear. And so having the perspective and representation of a behavioral health professional on the commission is very important. And I'm going to touch on three reasons why we think that it's important. The first is that the state of Alaska invests a substantial amount of money in the behavioral health system. And as you saw in Ms. Erickson's presentation, one of the diagnoses that the commission made about our health care system overall is that it's fragmented. And so to have a commission that doesn't include representation of a significant health care system that the state invests heavily in doesn't seem to resolve that fragmentation problem. The second is the fact that the issue of comorbidity when working with populations that experience a mental health disorder, that is significant. Often people that have a serious mental illness live 25 years less than people that don't have a mental illness because of chronic disease and those comorbidities. Which include things like diabetes. And so given, again, the commission's focus on chronic disease, having representation from the behavioral health field seems appropriate. The third is that what is contemplated here is systems change. The commission's report talks about how the system, as it works now, it just is not sustainable. And if you're going to really address a comprehensive systems change, you should have all of your health systems represented, and that includes the behavioral health system. So the recommendation that the boards would make is that in addition to the primary care professionals that are anticipated in this bill, that composition of the commission would include a behavioral health professional, taking into account the concerns that the commission could grow too unwieldy if everybody wanted their person on the commission. One suggestion is that it seems contemplated in 18090201E that health care provider who is not affiliated with ASHNA, that is a primary care provider, since it makes that reference. We think that it is possible to separate out and have a primary care provider, much like the previous public commenter from Peninsula Community Health talked about, from our federally qualified health centers and our providers that serve indigent populations have a seat for them, because that's another integral part of our system, and then to have a behavioral health professional as well. I would point out, too, in this systems change idea, there are movements afoot to integrate primary care and behavioral health, and we have some great examples. One of them is Peninsula Community Health. Another is what's going on at South Central Foundation. Alaskans are working hard to provide comprehensive health care to their clients. And so in order to have that adequately reflected in the commission's work, we would encourage that a member of the behavioral health profession who's actively licensed and practicing be included in its composition. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions? Here are no questions. We only have one other person, and that's Pat Luby. He's online. Are you still there, Pat?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the advocacy director for AARP. AARP is in full support of Senate Bill 172. We have attended many of the commission meetings, and despite its short tenure to date, we feel the commission has done some great work on some targeted issues. No matter what their background or political affiliation, they all worked collaboratively and politely and stayed focused on what would be good for all Alaskans. However, the commission has only begun to take on the important issues under the rubric of health care. Much more work has to be done. No matter what happens in Congress, Alaska needs to have a health commission of our best and brightest who can determine what Alaska ought to be doing on all aspects of health care. Senate Bill 172 will help us get there. AARP requests your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Here are no questions. Just to make sure I haven't omitted anyone, is there anyone in the audience that had planned to testify? Come forward, please. You didn't sign up, so yeah, I couldn't call you.
I apologize. I didn't see the sign-in sheet when I came in. I couldn't find it. I'm Shelley Hughes, Government Affairs Director with Alaska Primary Care Association, and I will try to be brief. Part of the reason Governor Palin and then Governor Parnell established the temporary current commission is because of a report by Commonwealth North, the Alaska Healthcare Roundtable Group. Listen closely to the title of that report, Alaska Primary Healthcare Opportunities and Challenges. And I point you to the words primary healthcare because on the current composition in the bill, we do support the bill. There is not a seat for primary care. You already did hear about that. I would like to mention that primary care, of course, is the gateway to health care, and it does include behavior health, dental, and medical. And throughout the bill, it's also mentioned as far as primary care and prevention. And without a designated seat for that, we are concerned that there won't be the expertise and input that might be helpful to the commission in working out a statewide plan. And we know, too, that primary care is a major part of the key to the cost savings. And you could get two for the price of one, actually, because if you were to add a primary care safety net seat, you would also be getting expertise on the uninsured problem in the state. And that is also one of the tasks of the commission, is to address that uninsured problem. So I encourage you to consider adding this seat. Right now, there is a seat for the three largest health systems in the state are hospitals, the tribal health community, and the community health centers. The first two are designated in the bill. The primary care safety net or the community health centers are currently not in the bill. The one provider seat may or may not be a primary care provider. Right now, it is not. It's a specialist. So I would like to encourage you to add this seat to, and I understand the need to keep it small, and I do appreciate that because you get too many folks on there and you will have trouble getting work done. But I think this is a key component and something very, very integral as far as working on a statewide plan. I want to mention, too, that the just pulled, I have it here if anyone would like to see it, off the State Chamber of Commerce website. They passed a position for this session in agreement of the establishment of the Health Care Commission, including a seat for primary care. So I thought I would mention that before closing. So that is it, and I appreciate the extra couple minutes there.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? No questions. That would complete our testimony for this time. We will open it up when we take the bill up again. We're not going to discuss the bill until the next hearing is set. And we are going to adjourn at this time. I just want to say to my members, I appreciate you stand here just a little bit beyond 3 o'clock. It's been very good to have all of you present, House side. All right, thank you. We'll dismiss at this time.